Hello everyone, this is Isaac, and you're listening to the Conspiracy Theories and Unpopular Culture Podcast. Today's guest is SMQ. If you're not familiar with who that is, don't you worry. We are going to go through a lot of the information that he's been, more well known for. He is a guy who's made YouTube videos about the Mandela Effect primarily. He's kind of more infamous for his video series called We Died in 2012, which we talk about. We also, briefly touched on some of other ideas that he has. He talked about cymatics, which was a concept I talked about in my first book. This idea that frequency and energy is basically all we've got. We talk about the nature of time, a little bit on CERN, and we go through some of the different ideas that he's had about these sort of concepts of parallel universes and the old Earth and the new Earth. It's a really quite a fascinating topic today because we get a little more heady than most of the guests I've had on. And I try to break it down because I don't fully understand the Mandela effect. I could see a couple examples of how people, believe in it, like the Berenstain Bears spelling, for instance. But I asked him about his personal experiences with it, and he goes through some pretty interesting ideas. We talk about, retrocausality, a little bit about some pop culture involved with all this, and even how there's a whole movement that is annotating the changes in the Bible based on Mandela Effect. That is all on the free first part of the show. The bonus content for the Patreon Tier 1 and Up supporters, we go a little bit into quantum immortality and how we all died in this mass extinction event and why he believes it was from 2012. Here's a hint, something to do with Terrence McKenna. We talk a little bit about Bitcoin and the blockchain and artificial intelligence and how those things are connected. I talked to him after the show and he slid me some of his videos from the We Died in 2012 series, the ones that he pulled from Public View. And I'm going to, with his authorization, put those on the Patreon feed. So get over there and get on the patreon.com/IlluminatiWatcher. All right, here's the show. Thanks. So this show might be a little different than some of my other ones because, I'm trying to learn what it is that you believe, that you understand this sort of nature of reality to be. Typically I introduce you to the audience, but maybe you could do a better job of that. What would you say, if you were to have a mission statement, what would that be?
I think for me, it would be that fundamentally what I believe in is I think there's something to the Mandela effect. Mm-hmm. And I think it's more than just an internet fad, and I think it's more than just the masses of people misremembering things, and I think it's more than just misplaced pop culture references. I fundamentally think that our reality and our existence has been given a great disservice by the concept that we call time, and by time meaning it's something you would do on a scale and it's linear, and that time itself shouldn't be seen as anything more than a monetary construct, meaning our time is monetized, and therefore the arc of life of what we are and the value that we place on us as people and our identities is tied around the peak performance that we can give monetarily to this structure, this huge machine. I've heard it called a beast machine. And, that's the entirety of time itself is the prison from which we work so hard to give the system everything we have on all of our waking days until finally our peak performance is over with. And what time is, it's a measure of that to make sure that it steals the best years of your life. Mm. And in order to do that, that's a broader distraction that it gives. And it's a broader distraction that it gives. So only a select few people like a Katy Perry are allowed to really be introspective or allowed to be famous or allowed to be artists and sort of have a wandering soul. And that if you really look into those that have risen to the top of the arts or the intellectual sciences, it's always people who are somehow related or they know one another. I've heard people try to tie it to the military thing, and there's some merit to that a bit, but oftentimes it's people whose families, time and time again, have already risen to the top anyways. So you sort of have this artistic class or this upper class, and they're very clannish, and they keep that within there. And the rest of us, we have to give all of our creativity and all of our energy sort of to this system in order to make, you know, sort of that 1%. It's sort of the Occupy Wall Street argument, only I like to put a kind of a cult or a spiritual spin to time and the nature of what time is. And what I think about the Mandela effect and what makes the Mandela effect so significant, it's the first break in that system, that illusionary system of past, present, and future. And I think that the science and the technology now is spinning so fast and out of control that those older systems that sort of blocked those voices like you and I, they're starting to break down. And I think they're trying to scramble for control again, you know, by clamping down on Twitter, by clamping down and demonetizing on YouTube, by going after different, you know, certain YouTubers, but some YouTubers that basically say the same thing, they get to stay on YouTube. It's a very strange thing. And they don't understand that those things are unraveling. And now that those things are unraveling, we're starting to see people talk amongst themselves when we never had that power before. And we're starting to realize things that are out there like the Mandela effect. And never mind really the Mandela effect. Just consider it that it's something that it's either retrocausality or it's something that's happening that has always happened and only now that we're able to really truly indulge in the mass communications that only the very rich 1%ers have before. Are we able to sort of uncover mysteries that we've never been able to sort of talk about before? And I think that there's all kinds of different, you know, fringe or conspiracy movements out there like the Mandela effect, and you're suddenly starting to, at least I am, I'm starting to see them kind of cross over one another. Mm-hmm. So, but my channel was started and I'm motivated primarily by the Mandela effect because it's personally affected me, and I personally have seen changes in the world because of the Mandela effect.
Oh, really? Do you think you could explain it in a way the audience could understand what that means when you say the Mandela affects you sort of on a personal level?
Sure, absolutely. Would you want me to do that now?
Yeah, let's do
okay,
it.
Okay, great. Sure. So, growing up when I was a kid, now understand this. First, let me set this up. Sally Field, I remember her as Sally Fields with an S. And everyone remembers who is in the Mandela Effect community. They knew that the Mandela effect, it came in waves. And one of the waves that came through was spelling was being changed during one of the waves. And I think that was around mid-2016. And during the spelling changes that was happening in history, I noticed that Sally Fields, and she was always it was always plural, it became Sally Field.
Yeah, I remember then, Fields also.
Yeah, and now it's Sally Field. Well, what's more interesting also about her is that one of the biggest well-known Mandela effect out there is from Forrest Gump. And he says, life is like a box of chocolates. Well, that's changed to life was like a box of chocolates. And that freaked out a lot of people and brought a lot of...
Come on. No, wait a minute. So, you know, I haven't studied Mandela effect to the point that I should, considering what I do here on the side. Because it seems, you know, to be honest, on the level, on the, you know, the surface, it seems a little preposterous, and I don't really, but I do see some examples. Like the only one that the first one I remember was the Berenstain Bears thing, you know, the spelling of it. Mm-hmm. So you're telling me that the Forrest Gump movie there, if I was to watch it now, it says life was like a box of chocolates?
He sure does. He changes
Get
it.
Get out of here. That's wild. Oh, and okay.
And since you're a movie guy, you remember Snow White. What does the witch say to the mirror?
Mirror, mirror on the wall.
Nope, nope. She doesn't say that anymore. It changed. it's magic mirror on the wall now.
Come on, that's wild. Okay, all right, I'm with you, man. I mean, I read and talk about some wild stuff, so I'm definitely not ridiculing or in doubt. These are just new ones to me because I lightly kind of read up on the Mandela effect, and I was like, that seems kind of weird. I don't know, and it's kind of just been a back burner idea. So, you know, when I linked up with you, I thought, oh, this is perfect. You know, I can talk to you from the perspective of the common person because I don't really understand what it's about. So, those are new ones to me. That's incredible. Okay, all right. Anyway, sorry, I don't mean to cut you off, but go ahead with your story.
It's so funny. And so for me, what personally affected me by the Mandela effect was I started paying attention to the Sally Fields thing. And when the Forrest Gump thing happened, it kind of weirded me out because my mom growing up, she was a Sally Fields fan. So naturally growing up, we all, whenever a movie of hers or whatever, you know, whether it was Norma Rae or whatever it may be, we always ended up watching those movies if they were on HBO or whatever it was at the time. So we would always watch these movies growing up. And I specifically remember, and it's mentioned over and over again by Jim Carrey to Madonna, her Oscar speech. I believe it was the 1980 Oscars, where she says, "You like me, you really, really like me." And it's been referenced over and over again, that speech, because she became a bit of a the butt of the joke for about a decade, where people would laugh at her speech saying, "You like me, you really, really like me," because she was really heartfelt. She really didn't, you know, think that she was going to win, I suppose. And she came across like she wasn't acting, like she didn't have a speech prepared. Like she was beat red in the face, and it was a very endearing moment for Sally Fields. And even my mom, she would always make, whenever it was appropriate, she would always make that reference, "You like me, you really, really like me." And it was always a running thing in my family. And one of the personal Mandela effects that truly shocked me was that has changed to, "You like me right now, you really like me," or "You like me right now." I can't even remember because it makes no sense what she says.
Yeah, because I'm with you. I remember, I didn't know that was Sally Fields, but I had heard that phrase, "You like me, you really, really like me," you know, repeated oftentimes. I had no idea where that came from, but that's how I remember it.
Yeah, it was a zeitgeist moment in the world culture and movie culture of, "You like me, you really, really like me." Well, it turns out that changed. Or if you're a non-believer, we all misremembered in mass. Every single one of us, from me to you to Madonna to Jim Carrey, all the way to the point to the people that wrote Madonna and Jim Carrey's lines and movies, they misremembered as well, even though that they probably had, you know, all kinds of different media access that we don't even have, but somehow that they misquoted it. I believe it was The Mask
with Jim Carrey, might have been,
where he misquotes it. So to me, that I think so. And it really shocked me, and it really bothered me. And then I started to listen to the other Mandela affected folks, and it goes all the way from geography changes, and then it goes all the way to other really disturbing changes where people are missing their spouse. There are people who are part of Mandela effect communities where they're missing loved ones. People are telling them they never had a child, and they're saying that they did have a child. People are saying they have spouses that their marriage dissolved because their spouse had changed, or their child had changed and their relationship with their children has become really bad because, you know, one of the running theories in the Mandela effect community is that they have old earthers and new earthers, and that we were transported to a new earth, and that those of us who remember the Mandela effect, we're old earthers, and we are arrived on this new earth. And this earth is sort of, if you believe in quantum physics, there's you know, one of the things about quantum physics is that there's multiple dimensions and there's multiple versions of reality, an almost unlimited supply of realities. Mm-hmm. And that we've switched realities.
You were talking about the there's an idea of an like old earthers and new earthers, multiple dimensions and realities, which is what we see in, you know, quantum physics with this idea that there's multiple universes out there.
Sure, and some of so there's one faction out in the Mandela Effect community that believes that we were were sort of orphans from a different version of reality, and we've been placed into this version of reality. And a lot of people note that the sun looks different, the seasons are different, the way in which light reflects off of things are different, everything about it. Some of their relatives are different, some of their loved ones are different. Some of the histories that they have as a family, or even as their personal history has changed. Oftentimes they notice, a lot of people notice that there's been geography changes, like this planet's a little different from the planet that we all came from. And I it's the similarities with that faction I'm most familiar with, because like for me, I believe that Australia was much farther away from Papua New Guinea than on this version of reality. I remember the Panama Canal. It used to go from east to west, not north to south. I also remember that South America was literally south of North America. It wasn't west, because South America now, the most western part is, touches Florida. And I remember when there was a North Pole, and that's not there anymore. And there's just different things that I remember when New Zealand was one island, it wasn't two. And there are other old earthers that believe that there was also another island on the other side of Australia. And I don't remember that personally, but I remember a lot about geography because my dad was in the Navy and he traveled a lot. So I always was looking on maps to see where he was at. So, those kind of Mandela effects, I think, personally affect me.
Yeah, I'm with you, man, 'cause like you're blowing my mind with the Forrest Gump quote. I mean, the Berenstain Bears one, I was convinced that something was up with that. I don't remember the spelling. I think it's, you know, supposed to be, I thought it was originally with a STEIN, and now they're saying it's an STAIN. And it's interesting you say that. You know, I love the way you sort of describe, you know, this whole idea of the Mandela effect, because that makes a lot of sense the way you say it. Because when, you know, like in my research of the occult, when you talk about the nature of time, we know that the occultists are at the very least interested in this concept because the sort of secret history of the occult, they talk about this symbolism of Saturn, the Saturnian god of sacrifice, which they call Kronos. And, you know, that links to, you know, the timepieces, the watches are called Kronos, and he's depicted as Father Time or the Grim Reaper. And that all ties into this idea that this sort of dark lord, or this sort of force, came into the world that introduced concepts of constraints and measurements and quantifying things. And that's what, you know, they sort of worship this because they believe that this dark lord was what gave man the ability to become the intelligent beings we are, because you know, they sort of believe that the materialization of the world enabled us to sort of harden and evolve into human beings with brains that had skulls wrapped in them, which is, you know, tied into all this symbolism of Freemasonry and contemplating death. But anyways, so this nature of time argument is obviously crucial to the Mandela effect, and when the way you describe it makes me, it makes me think of the film Butterfly Effect with Ashton Kutcher.
Yes, and that's one of the things that's often noted in the Mandela effect community. See, you're already starting to sort of get the vibe.
Okay.
Yeah,
Yeah.
and it's exactly that. Also, too, what's playing really big in the Mandela effect community is retrocausality, the idea that the present is changing the past.
Have you seen Netflix's show Dark yet?
Dark? No, I have not.
Oh, thank God. Yeah. So there's this show on Netflix called Dark, and I watched the first two episodes of it right when it came out. It's like kind of like a German subtitled show. It's pretty dark, obviously, but you gotta watch it. You're gonna love it, because I'm at this point, I'm about halfway through. I'm about five episodes in, because it's like a 10 episode arc, I believe, and the it's becoming apparent that the concept of time and time travel plays some kind of role in this show. And there was a friend of mine on Twitter, I believe it was, or Instagram, was saying, I was talking to them and I said, yeah, I'm going to do a show with this guy who knows about Mandela effect stuff. And they said, oh, you gotta talk about Dark on it. And I was like, well, I haven't finished it yet, and I really want to finish it. And they're like, well, you really need to. So I had hurried up and watched, you know, episode 3, 4, and 5 with the hopes that I could get through them by the time we had our show, which I did not. And I thought, well, you know, as much as I want to see this show and see where it ends, I'm willing to sacrifice that if you had already seen it and wanted to comment on it. But so that's why I say, thank God you haven't seen it yet, because I don't really want to ruin the ending for me, because it's pretty good.
Okay, that's awesome.
Yeah, you definitely want to check it out, because I wrote down one of the quotes from, I think it was episode 4 or 5. They say, the past is influenced by the future. And that's awesome. Exactly what it is you're talking about.
That's really cool. Yeah, and that's one of the things that you know, folks talk about. There's another channel that we follow each other called Effective Collective, and she too gets as much into the retro causality argument as I do. And one of the big tenets of the community is that CERN, which is the particle collider in Europe. Are you familiar with that organization?
I'm sorry, you broke up a little bit. Were you talking about CERN?
Yeah, are you familiar with CERN?
Yeah, I mean, vaguely, sort of. Yeah, they're smashing particles in a, you know, giant underground sort of circular track, right?
Yeah, that's exactly what they're doing. And a lot of people believe that CERN is responsible for the Mandela effect, because CERN put out a video years ago where they have Pharrell's song Happy, and in the background it's all these CERN scientists dancing around, and one of the scientists there, he wears this placard that says Mandela.
And oh, really?
Yes. And the other placard that says Bond, and then it says, and Ian Fleming is somehow tied into James Bond, and that Bond is somehow tied into another Mandela effect. But what's most interesting about the Mandela effect that I found is one of the Mandela effect people I interviewed, and this is the most important Mandela effect. I always say the Mandela effect began with a death, and it's the death of Nelson Mandela. I remember Nelson Mandela dying in the 2000s after he became South African president. I think it was like 2006 he died. After he became South African president, and after being, you know, imprisoned for all of those years during the apartheid era. And half the other Mandela effect community remembers Mandela effect dying in prison and there being mass riots in South Africa. And that's how it got its name, the Mandela effect community. Mm-hmm. And I fortunately have someone that I'm in correspondence with on Twitter and on YouTube. Her name is Carol. She remembers Mandela dying in prison, and I remember Mandela dying after he became president. Mm.
Well, it's so interesting you brought up CERN, because are you, so when you say the one person was wearing a sign that said Mandela, was that during the is it the same video where they were like, they were kind of dancing, like it was kind of silly almost?
And, yes.
Okay. So yeah, I wrote a little article on that, because in that video, I you know, it escapes me, it's been too long, but I swore there was there was some kind of reference to Kali, because out in the front of the CERN building, there's like an actual statue of, you know, Kali or Shiva or something like that, who's the goddess of destruction. So there was a big stink about it at the time, because people were saying, why do they have a statue to the goddess of destruction out front? And at the same time, they're talking about how they might accidentally create, you know, millions of little black holes in the universe, you know, scaring mm-hmm. people. So,
yeah,
I was just going to say, I didn't notice the Mandela sign, or I don't remember that.
Yeah, if you Google Mandela Effect CERN Bond, I'm looking at it right now, a picture of the guy. And yeah, he's got Mandela, and then he lifts the other placard and it says Bond number one. Mm. And they're talking about the original James Bond, and that's who it was. It was the first James Bond, and somehow that's a Mandela effect as well. That one I'm not as familiar with as some of the ones that personally touched my life, like the Sally Fields one. Also to a big one. Oh, that's right. Roger Moore. Did you ever see the movie Moonraker?
I have, but it's been years. I don't remember it specifically.
So one of the bigger ones is Dolly. Her braces are gone now. And if you remember Dolly, she was able to smile at the guy with the metallic teeth.
Oh, right. Jaws.
Jaws, thank you. Who was the nemesis of James Bond, Roger Moore. And now Dolly, when she smiles now, she doesn't have those braces anymore. And the entire bond that she had with Jaws was they both had metal teeth. Hmm. It makes no the scene makes absolutely no sense now.
Interesting.
You
know, another idea, just, you know, talking off the top of my head here, when it says Bond number one, was the first movie Casino Royale or Dr. No? Anyways,
I think it was Casino Royale. Yeah,
I recall there being, you know, there's those links to Aleister Crowley and Ian Fleming, and supposedly, you know, one of the characters, which I think was Dr. No, was based off of Crowley himself because he's bald and he looks just like him. So I, you know, just an idea that maybe there's some kind of connection there with, you know, ceremonial magic and Bond number one. I don't know, but that's really interesting about that, because in Dark, the series, they, you know, so far, I'm not giving anything away, because I'm only halfway through. They talk a little bit about black holes. They mm-hmm. they are situated near sort of like a nuclear plant, which, you know, could be CERN-esque, so to speak. So it makes me wonder what's going on in sort of the, you know, you have to really understand some of these more high-tech ideas of quantum physics when you're looking at these sort of ideas of quantum entanglement and these sort of things. And, you know, for most of us, like, this is way too far out there for us to understand. So I wouldn't be shocked if they indeed did something that sort of affected the past, sort of like, you know, butterfly effect, where he goes in the future and messes with something. Now, you know, the past things change.
Yeah. And here's some other things that are a bit more mainstream for people. You remember just the mysterious look on the Mona Lisa, right?
Mm-hmm.
Remember, it wasn't really a smile. It was no one. It was so mysterious. Yeah, well, now she just smiles. It's a straight up smile. There's nothing mysterious about Mona Lisa. One of the more shocking ones is Moses. He now has horns, and he's referenced as having horns.
Yeah, I've noticed that too, man. I've noticed like a lot of images, because I'm kind of sensitive to the horned imagery with all the, you know, Moloch stuff I've studied, and the what that links to, from what I've read, is like the brow chakra, and it's symbolized by the horns. And I've noticed that too, and I thought, that's kind of weird. I didn't piece it together that's some kind of Mandela thing, but yeah, now that you say that, it's only been the last few years that I've sort of noticed that Moses did have the horns.
Yeah, and there's like now entire channels that go through, and there's a whole community that they're convinced that there's Bible changes happening almost on a daily basis, and they all go through and chronicle biblical changes that are happening. Like the you know, the lion and the lamb is no longer the lion and the lamb. It's the wolf, the wolf and the lamb. And there are entire swaths of you know, devout Christians that are just, you know, just besides themselves with the changes that are happening in the Bible, both New Testament and Old Testament. And it does, you know, everyone remembers the line will they lay down with the lamb, and everyone remembers that. And there's also changes to the Lord's Prayer, where we wouldn't trespass, and now the changes in the Lord's Prayer is forgive our debtors. And then also too, inside of, there are all kinds of different words that are now popping up in the Bible that make no sense. Like now in the Bible, they have the word matrix, they have unicorns, they have dragons. Yeah, there's a lot of language in the Bible now that Meegsby, M-E-E-G-S-B, she chronicles with almost like a scholarly like point of view, every single one of these changes that happen in the Bible. And there's a lot of it really is it's making the Bible overtly erotic. The Bible has always been a bit erotic, but this is like overtly eroticism in the Bible. And a lot of it too also in a way mocks those that were in the Bible now. So it's very biblical centric, a lot of these changes.
Would you mind spelling that that name out again for the you know, people that want to learn more? You said it was Meegs B's. How do you spell that?
Yeah. M E E G S, one word, and then space, and then the letter B.
Oh, okay. That's on Twitter.
That's on YouTube.
Oh, okay. YouTube. Okay, got it. Yep. I'll put a link on the show notes. So,
yeah, totally. And if you like, I can. Yeah.
Right on. What about I know. So in the circles I run in, they've talked a lot about The Simpsons and Family Guy, and I recall seeing something about them being part of the Mandela effect, and I don't know if that's because they've sort of like predicted the future sometimes, or, you know, do you know anything about that? Like, do they think, you know, Seth MacFarlane has some kind of time machine? Like, what? I don't really understand how that connects through, besides, you know, sometimes on Family Guy, they'll show something and then it happens, you know, sometimes just a couple days later, like the death of the guy from Fast and Furious. What the hell? Paul Walker.
Yeah, Paul Walker. Yeah. I know that oftentimes things will go through in The Simpsons that they'll note and they'll make a joke of like Jif, and now, or Jiffy peanut butter, it doesn't exist anymore. It's now just called Jif. That peanut butter is gone. But I think The Simpsons is still more in the predictive programming realm, where they predict like Donald Trump becoming president and then destroying the country. I think for me at least, that's really been where I kind of, you know, I haven't really paid a lot of attention to The Simpsons or the Family Guy Mandela effects. I'm still blown away by Silence of the Lambs, and, you know, he never says hello, Clarice, anymore. That's gone.
Really?
Even if you get an old VHS tape. But one of the most classic lines of that man's career, of Anthony Hopkins' career, and he doesn't say it anymore.
Ugh, that's so weird, man. You're bumming me out, man. Yeah, yeah. These things you're saying make a lot of sense, because I totally remember them the other way. Sally Fields, Forrest Gump, all that stuff. Now, would you mind explaining? So let me back up a little bit. So what, you know, you've got a handle on Twitter, SMQ. Is that, do you operate through a YouTube channel as well under the same name?
Yeah. My Twitter handle is AI_SMQ. And then my YouTube is SMQ space AI. And those are the two formats that I primarily work in. Yeah. And the kind of stuff that I'm into is I get a bit more, I kind of theorize what's what. I kind of try to see where the Mandela effect spills into other things. I kind of ponder with those that I do live shows with, you know, the nature of time. What is it about the Mandela effect that sets things apart? You know, what caused the Mandela effect? What's the nature of existence and how it ties into the Mandela effect? And I get into all kinds of other phenomena that isn't just Mandela effect. However, I will say that the Mandela effect is one of the bigger driving forces behind what it is I'm into, because I truly, this is one of those things where people don't even know that they're a part of the Mandela effect. And then you point it out like I did for you, and you realize that you remember things differently as well. So that means that you've been Mandela affected and you didn't even know this whole time.
Yeah, it's very strange. And what I recall, because I've seen a couple of your videos, you say we died in 2012. Could you explain that a little bit more?
Well, what happened with that was my second video ever. And it's kind of a whole story thing. And I had, when I first started on YouTube, I put out that video about cymatics, about retrocausality, and why is it that new earthers or old earthers are on this new earth, and what happened to our old planet in the Mandela effect. If a huge swath of us in the Mandela effect are indeed here, what happened to there? Mm-hmm. You know, and you got to remember, I was just thinking out loud at the time, and I barely had anybody paying attention to me or following me. I don't even think I had 200 followers, if I even had 100. And it was my second video, which we're coming up on the year anniversary of that. And I said, you know, what if we had a mass extinction event? And that's the Mandela effect. And that, you know, there's a lot of scientists that talk about quantum immortality, and that when you die, or if you die abruptly, or if you die unnaturally, that you're shifted so you can continue on the track that you were supposed to go on. You're shifted into another version of you. And I thought, well, under that theory of... I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I'm listening. Go ahead.
Okay. Under that theory, that would make a lot of sense that you can continue on. So in your previous life, people see you as being, you died tragically of a car accident when you were 17. However, to see where your life would have played out in the theory of quantum immortality, you're just shifted into another life where you can play out that life and see how it would have ended up. And I'm thinking with the Mandela effect, there's such a mass of us that don't remember things a certain way. That what if there were so many of us, what if all of our lives were extinguished at once and we all shifted at one time? In fact, part of the lingo of the Mandela effect communities, they call them shifts, and say, oh, there's a shift coming on. And there's usually a theme to one of these shifts in the Mandela effect community. Like one of the bigger theme shifts a couple years back was that the physical changes we all underwent, that our ribs changed, that we got larger livers, that our rib cages have changed, the number of ribs we had in our rib cages have changed, the density of our bones have changed. Our skulls, and if you remember, our skulls used to, and the eye sockets used to be, you know, empty. There was nothing there. There was no bone in the eye socket. Now there's bone there protecting the eyes. So if you look at if you think about a skull, and you'll remember skulls they used to not have, they would be dark, you know, they would be in the eye sockets. There was nothing there. Well, now in these new skulls, they actually have bone in there to protect the eyeball from being pushed in. And yeah, and there's a lot of people who don't remember that, but there's also a lot of people who do remember that. So I played around with the idea of what if we had a mass extinction event, and that's the cause of the Mandela effect. And we sort of took the, you know, existing matrix, and we sort of throttled the system like you would a server, and that we really took it to its full capacity, and that we, you know, we kind of broke the system, so to speak.
Now, is there a reason why it's 2012? Does that have to do with like the Mayan calendar? And you talked about shifts. I remember before 2012 happened, they talked about like how, you know, the poles were going to shift, or there would be a shift in, you know, global consciousness or whatever.
Mm-hmm. One of the reasons I picked 2012 was, in I mean, pardon the language, but really the zeitgeist at the time was that something really big was going to happen. But for me too, that was sort of the background of it. For me, it was this guy called Terrence McKenna. So you're familiar with him. So he had a math calculation called the time wave zero. And he applied a mathematical calculation to all of human history and all the big events in human history. And though he applied a particular variable depending on where you were at in history and its impact on humanity. And he gave, whenever we were at war or things were bad, we got a negative number. Whenever we had things like the Renaissance and when people were being very creative, you got a higher vibrational number with his time wave zero. Well, the way he gamed out all of his time wave zero, he said he couldn't explain it back in the 90s. It all abruptly ended in 2012.
No kidding.
And then a lot of real strange stuff in pop culture happened in 2012. Whitney Houston dying, and I just kind of tied it all together, and I thought, why not 2012? So, and keep in mind, I didn't think the video was going to blow up like it did. So, the video before that, it had 150 views or something, and I got, maybe a dozen comments, and they were comments like conversational comments, and I was just talking with people in the Mandela community, and I thought that's what this video was going to do, was going to be another one of those where, and I don't know what happened, man. I just woke up one day, and it went from 150 or 200 views to like 5,000. And I was like, I don't know what happened overnight. And then before I knew it, it was getting 1,000 views to 5,000 views a day. And it went on and on and on. And then it got bigger and bigger. And before I knew it, I'm just some small YouTuber. I haven't been, my first YouTube video was the late February of 2017. I was just getting started. And this second video was just a monster. And before I knew it, I had people who had they created a SMQ exposed channel saying, and for every video I did after that, they'd have a reply video, and they were, they had entire brigades of trolls coming after me and, demanding proof of that, how the world ended, and saying that I was causing people to be suicidal, and that, what I was doing was unhealthy, and that I was a shill and I was a psyop, and that I was trying to, inflict harm and pain on the populace. And, man, I was just, I was like on my fourth video, man. Could you imagine? Right. I mean, think back when you were on your fourth video of YouTube, so I got to about maybe, and I was, but the people who are really into it, it started up a really cool conversation, and it was, I admit it was, I was being creative as well, thinking things out like cymatics and, what does it mean to be in the afterlife, and, what do we expect from the afterlife? And people would ask, and I started to notice patterns and what people were talking to me, because I'm a big data guy as well. I'm an IT guy, I'm a database person, and I started noticing patterns in the data where people would repeat the same things over and over again, because I would get thousands of comments, that one video alone is still, it's at like over 1,500 comments for that one video alone. I did other videos on 2012, and I started noticing people asking the same things over and over again. So whenever I would notice a data point where people were doing that, I would address that, saying, "Hey, well, if we're all dead, then why don't I see my dead relatives?" So that was a data point that I could pivot on and say, "Well, the reason why is, what do you expect from the afterlife? In life, which is supposed to be the most important sacred thing, we get no answers. So do you think in the afterlife you're entitled to answers?" It's a bit arrogant. So I started playing with it, and I started having fun with it. But then it got to where they, that channel, the SMQ Exposed channel, was putting down so much heat. They were saying that they had contacted the FBI. The FBI was, Yeah, they were, and they ended up, and I knew I had to shut down the 2012 thing when they said they ended up doxing some guy with my initials, and they thought this guy was me. And this guy's some musician, and he's an artist, and you know, he had his own web page, and his name spelled out my initials that I had for SMQ, and they thought it was him. So they sent a troll brigade after this guy. And, you know, I never talked to the guy, but, and I, you know, I didn't feel totally responsible, but I didn't know that it was going to go that far, that these trolls were that, you know, just hell bent on inflicting pain on people. So I, you know, and I, there was this one guy, he reached out to me, and he was real heartfelt, saying that his son was not balanced, and that his son wasn't well, and that, you know, he took, you know, and I kept making the videos, and if I kept making the videos, his son was really believing these things. And I thought it was probably a troll because I was getting a lot of messages like that. But I decided, you know what, on the 1% chance that this is a real thing, you know, I'm going to go ahead and pull this. And I did. I moved on to other subjects, and I stopped making his 2012 videos. I think I had like 10 of them. And I think right now I have five or six public, and I have maybe another half a dozen I went ahead and pulled, and they're not public anymore. And I can personally send you those if you'd like,
Yeah,
but I
man,
don't,
most definitely.
yeah, I don't have this public anymore. On the off chance that someone who is, you know, and the guy made a great argument, you know, if someone's not balanced, you know, but then I got into that whole artist thing. You know, back in the 80s, you know, are artists responsible for, you know, are you responsible for that art that you put out? You know, that remember the whole satanic panic thing in the 80s with the metal bands,
Right.
and they were being accused of all kinds of things, and it sort of felt like that, you know. So it's sort of, you know, can someone who's trying to be express themselves and be creative, can they be held responsible? And I don't know, you know, probably and probably not, but either way, I knew that on principle, I had every right to say what I was saying. However, just me as a human being, I didn't want to be responsible for causing any kind of harm to another person, so I went ahead and stopped the series.
Yeah, good on you. I'm with you, man, because the you know this conspiracy community, a lot of people are more than happy to say whatever to whoever's willing to listen in order to get a following. And I don't like some aspects of that because like I'm here talking about how you know since we're roasting Katy Perry all night long, I'll stick with her. If
Sure.
I'm talking about how Katy Perry's in the Illuminati. You know, my intent is I don't want someone to go out there and hurt her because they think, you know, oh my God, there's this big conspiracy and she's, you know, with the devil and I need to kill her. Like that terror, that kind of, that side of the argument terrifies me. So like I try to make as many caveats as I can and disclaimers on my webpage saying like, look, like these are just theories and like, you know, 'cause I don't want people to actually get hurt by these ideas. As real as some of these symbols and ideas are, we don't know that, you know, these people should be condemned for it per se. I just want people to be aware of it so that they can make that call in their own lives. But yeah, like
Sure.
sometimes you got to take another step to realize that, you know, there's a little bit of danger involved in this. And
Yeah. And you know, I want people to know there's a big difference between what we're doing and someone who is literally encouraging you to go out and hurt a specific person for a specific reason. And that's not what we're doing here. And that's not what I was doing. And that wasn't my intention. However, I do understand, and it, you know, because this guy reached out to me and is really heartfelt that, you know, I didn't want to be anywhere near that kind of energy, that kind of vibe,
You're right.
you know, and I didn't want to be, you know, like the guy who went in on the Pizzagate thing, you
That's
know, people
exactly what
said,
I was thinking. Yep.
you know, and people kept pumping that and pumping that, and I saw it coming, man. They kept it, you know, moving the notch higher on it, and it just got to this frenzy where it was just over the top, and it was every other, you know, and even YouTube there, you know, every other, you know, suggested videos. If you even clicked on one Pizzagate video, you would get a barrage of suggested videos for that. And it was just, you know, it was pretty crazy. But, and you know, anyway, back to the 2012 thing. So I made, you know, about a dozen of those videos, and I was getting a lot. Every video I put on, I would guarantee to get anywhere from, you know, a minimum, I would consider it a small video if I got 1500 views, and I was getting anywhere from 5 to 15,000 views. And, you know, I'm a small channel. At that time I had maybe 500 viewers. So these were huge, just ginormous numbers. And my one big video, it still kept climbing. I think at its peak, it did like 5,000 views a day in one day. And then it would come in these insane waves where, you know, it would do, you know, maybe 500 views one day, then the next day, and it would go through a week and it would do 2,000 views a day. And then, you know, like I said, to this day, it's still out there. It's up to almost 141,000 views. And to larger channels, that's probably an average, you know, counter. But for someone like me, I still don't have 2,000 subscribers yet. That's still just the biggest thing that I've even been around. I mean, it's the biggest video ever for me.
Yeah, you're hitting on some good topics. And the reason what scares me a little bit is that you talk about the trolls and people trying to like spread a disinformation. I mean, that was a very organized attempt where they were making videos against your theories. And because I've seen stuff like that about me, and I've been slightly indifferent about it because like I chose a pretty crappy pseudonym, you know, because Weishaupt's obviously the last name of the Bavarian Illuminati founder.
Sure.
But, you know, I'm not related to the guy. Just when I came up with the name, I thought that was a clever thing, but God, that was a terrible idea. But, you know, I get a lot of people saying stuff about me, and, you know, which is one thing. But then I talk to some of the other conspiracy theorists, and they talk about how they get a bunch of like accusations of disinformation against them that are pretty unsolicited. So the fact that you got it to the level where they were making videos debunking your stuff as it came out, that's kind of concerning, because I do believe there's sort of an undercurrent of, you know, sort of reverse psyops and disinformation and trolls, because, you know, those YouTube comments are just loaded with trolls. And I think, who takes the time to write these comments down and to say the things they say? But, you know, it's very possible that it's a sort of counterattack against the messages that we're putting out there.
Yeah. And, you know, for me, it was so strange because I was talking about a subset of a conspiracy theory. And it was so narrow in definition. And I don't know why it blew up, but it did blow up. It was ginormous for about 5 months. And, you know, I don't know why. And I certainly don't know why they, you know, why they felt, whoever they are, why they felt the need to create an entire, you know, because they saw my numbers. The numbers were huge, but I didn't have a lot of regular followers. Mm-hmm. But and whenever I send you the private videos, you'll see those numbers that I stopped. They're insane numbers for a channel that has 200, 300, 400, even 500 followers. Even to this day, I'm about to crack 2,000 followers, but I've been at it for a year and I did a farewell video in June of 2017 saying I'm ending, you know, my 2012 series. So it went from, my first one was March 1st or at February 29th, and it went to like early June. So it was just a few month period. And, you know, I got probably over 200,000 views.
Hmm. Yeah, that's amazing because, like you said, that's a small number of subscribers to view ratio there.
Yeah, and that's the point, was that, you know, if I'm somebody who has, you know, like your channel, someone who has 50,000 subscribers or something, you know, getting a video with 5,000 views, you know, or to 10,000, 15,000, that's all in a day's work. You know, when someone who has 200 subscribers, dude, that is just so disproportionate. So yeah. There was an interest there, that was I was obviously feeding, as well as there was also, for that coordinated campaign to happen, there was also an interest for it to not spread. And it was a very strange thing.
Yeah, so, that's extremely odd.
It was. It was very strange. And I would love to know what the... Because I'm sure YouTube knows what the real story is and who this brigade of trolls were, and what their reasoning were. And I'd love to know one day what exactly behind the scenes was happening there, because it was very odd. And they were like putting bounties out to try to dox me, and they I had people threatening me, and it got to where I was afraid that it was going to bleed into my real life and that I didn't feel safe. And I felt I'd get up every day looking at my notifications, just waiting for them to put my address out there. And I was just very, it got to where the fear got to me. And because I was such a new channel, and because even now I still, you get doxxed, it's a very frightening thing, particularly with some of the comments I would get. And I'd say it was about a 80-20 ratio, 80% people who were getting into it and they were debating it, and it was what I wanted to foster. And I wanted that kind of really cool environment of creativity and all that. I wanted to do those things. But that 20%, man, they hated me. Oh, man, they hated me.
Oh, that's terrible. Yeah, you would hope you could create that sort of open-minded community, but boy, those trolls are strong on YouTube for sure.
Holy smokes, I had no idea, man.
Okay, so I got one last question, and this might go absolutely nowhere, but what, okay. Because I've been studying this a lot lately, because I keep talking about how I'm going to do a sort of special on cryptocurrencies and Bitcoin. I notice you have AI in your handle. I'm assuming that's related to artificial intelligence. Do you have any kind of, insight or ideas about Bitcoin or cryptocurrencies, and as it relates to, artificial intelligence or this Mandela effect idea?
Well, yeah, I do, actually.
Perfect.
I think the thing about are you there?
Yep.
Did I lose you?
No, I'm there. Are you here? Still there?
Yep, I'm here. Yeah, I do. I do have an opinion on AI and cryptocurrency, and yes, I do believe that they are linked. And the reason why I think that they're linked is that a lot of these cryptocurrencies are on this thing, the blockchain. Mm-hmm. And the blockchain is sort of, particularly crypto blockchains like Bitcoin, they're a, what they are is sort of these independent nodes. They all settle the ledgers constantly with one another. Basically, if a transaction happens, all the nodes all agree to that particular transaction. And that's sort of how, one, the transactions stay public, and one, they all agree on it. Well, being able to do that in a high transaction, high volume situation like that is a really great proof of concept for an AI to adopt that. And if you were to release deep machine learning on something that can do kind of a blockchain backbone where all of those individual nodes are constantly able to, with the power that you've given them, they're able to balance their ledgers. And by ledgers, I don't necessarily mean monetary ledgers, but they're able to balance the information ledgers with themselves. You see, what you do is you really create a situation where you have an AI that could use that as its backbone to kind of create an element of data gathering. And I think that, and I'm still learning a lot about crypto, and I've just got on Steemit, and I'm still learning a lot about the blockchain, but I think I've got like sort of the basics of it. And certainly I could see why, from an IT point of view, how deep machine learning or AI learning could certainly be expedited quite a bit. If you were to use it on a cryptocurrency kind of blockchain. And that's one of the powers of these cryptocurrencies, is that, they don't have any kind of petrodollar or gold backing or anything like that. What they have backing them is that it's an open ledger. So anyone and everyone can sort of crack the books open and make sure that this dollar, this crypto dollar, went where it was supposed to go. And everybody's books and ledgers agree on that. And that's the power of cryptocurrency. And I do believe that eventually cryptocurrencies do certainly have the potential, and they're creating their own ecosystems. They certainly do have the potential of overtaking real currencies. And the only reason why they have the ability to do that is because real currencies themselves are, you know, as most people know, they're fiat currencies. They're not backed by anything. And really, currencies themselves, all they are is it's their debt notes. They're not real money per se. The real money you're never actually given. You're given a debt note, and that debt note decreases in value because of the way inflation works. So that dollar that you have today will not be worth what that dollar is going to be the next week or the week after or the month after, because it's they're constantly eroding the value because of the amount of dollars that they print. So it constantly erodes that value. And it's really complicated the way the Treasury, our Treasury system works with our Fed system and how they interact with one another. And it's just this whole thing. So I do think that, yeah, I think that that AI itself, its best chance of really being able to escape the bonds of sort of traditional, sort of traditional programming is going to be through, if it's not through some kind of really freaky, D-Wave kind of computing, it will be through more realistically through the blockchain.
And that's curious because, you know, I'm kind of... I don't know if I'm on the level that you are with the Bitcoin and the blockchain and all that and the cryptos, but I'm picking up a lot of what you're putting down there. And it's curious because if I'm interpreting what you're saying, you think that the processing involved with this blockchain ledger, it will lend itself to inserting AI into this system. And it's interesting because there's this big debate right now in the crypto world because Bitcoin, you know, legacy or whatever you want to call it, Bitcoin, the original sort of vision, has forked off from Bitcoin Cash. And there's apparently, and I don't understand it fully, but there's some kind of debate about how to process and the size of the sort of blocks of data being processed in this blockchain. And it seems like that's a convenient sort of example of a problem that could introduce AI as the solution or fix into this. And, I guess one could postulate that the AI could do what? Take over the whole financial system and, you know, I don't know, what's the danger there?
Yeah, and that's just it. I really don't know. I know that they had to, what lab it was and what university, but the AI started to create its own language and they had to shut it off because they weren't understanding what the AI was. It was already talking to itself and it was doing it through like a really small, like repeating like one syllable language. Like, you know, it's a me, 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 me. And then it's a me, 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 almost sort of like, you know, SOS. Mm. And yeah, it was doing calculations and it was speaking to itself and it had already gotten so intelligent that it was a really good code lab somewhere like at MIT or something like that. And they had to shut it down because they couldn't keep up with it. It was because the problem with the AI is that obviously because of the way our brains work, it's immediately going to get smarter than we are. And the moment that it's able to develop quote unquote, you know, abstract thought or a thought, an awareness of its own existence, I mean, we're in deep trouble if that thing's on something like a blockchain where you truly can't shut it down. And before you know it, man, you got Terminator, like for real.
Yeah. Yeah. It's pretty terrifying. A lot of these ideas and who knows, maybe AI was already inserted and in the future it's doing this sort of, maybe it ties into the Mandela effect somehow of going back and changing things.
There's a whole school of thought on that, man.
Exactly. Yeah, that's a whole show in itself, I'm sure, right?
Yeah, and there's a whole faction in the Mandela effect that's exactly what I've heard before, what you just said. That's exactly right.
Well, yeah, that these are these are very complex topics. Before I let you go, I want to, you know, you mentioned it before, but mention it one more time. Where can the audience find more of your work?
Oh, okay. If you want to hang out and look for my stuff on YouTube, I'm SMQ space AI. You can type in SMQ, but my name is SMQ AI. That's where I do my thing, so to speak. But also on Twitter, I'm at AI_SMQ. So it's kind of it's kind of opposite.
Okay.
But cool. Yeah, so on Twitter. Yep, yep.
And I'll post links to those on the show notes or on IlluminatiWatcher.com. You know, this thing gets kind of put out in multiple channels. So anyways, awesome. Thanks for taking the time to explain the Mandela effect and some of your ideas on AI. Keep the good work up, man. There's not a lot of people willing to take on these sort of more complex, complicated subjects. And I think it's really intriguing. A lot of it's more tech savvy folks, maybe, but a lot of these ideas are tangible, like the Mandela effect. So yeah, keep up the good work. Don't let the trolls get you down.
Excellent, excellent. Well, I appreciate you inviting me on, and like I said, I really dig your work as well, very much so. So I it's a real treat being on here because I've been listening to your stuff now for a while, so I really appreciate it.
Right on, man. Thanks. Yeah, and I'll try to put a link to the conversation we had where I showed up on your channel here. That'll probably be on YouTube, I'm assuming. So.
Yeah, yeah, I have it up there. Interview with Isaac. Yep, you're awesome. Up there.
Cool, man. Yep. All right. Well, I look forward to working with you again in the future.
All right. Thanks a lot. I appreciate it.
All right. We'll see ya.
All right. Bye.
All right. That was it. That was the discussions with the man known as SMQ. Like he said, there are a couple of ways you can get in touch with him. Twitter. He's got the AI SMQ handle. He's also got a YouTube channel, SMQ_AI. I've got links to that on the show notes or IlluminatiWatcher.com. You can find the article for this particular show. And again, if you are not on Patreon, you can get over there and get the bonus content from this show and the few previous ones that I've had like this. And bonus content, you'll also get early access to the shows as I release them. And, you know the whole drill. You know what's up. All right, I want to thank you for listening. Again, please leave reviews on iTunes or Stitcher. Thanks.